take a look at this beer glass. It doesn't look particularly robust. If anything, it feels almost flimsy in your hand. It's lightweight and the walls are thin. Let's drop it. And again. And again. It is called Superfest. That's German for super firm. When it was invented in 1977, it was estimated to be about 5 times as durable as ordinary glassware. In practice, it turned out to be nearly 15 times as durable. This glass is basically unbreakable. It's heat resistant, stackable, and lightweight. But despite Superfest's undeniable quality, these glasses haven't been produced in over 4 decades. The company that produced them no longer exists. In fact, the country that produced them no longer exists. What was their secret? And perhaps more importantly, why aren't we all drinking from these unbreakable glasses today? To understand Superfest, we first need to understand where it comes from. It's 1949. From the rubble of World War II's devastation and the defeat of the Nazis, 2 new countries are born. The Federal Republic of Germany in the west and the German Democratic Republic, or GDR, in the east. The world will come to know it as East Germany. East Germany has been founded under the ideals of socialism and anti-fascism and aims to promote equality and prosperity amongst the working class. But throughout its 41-year existence, East Germany will be a country plagued by economic hardship, particularly in its early days. It's been cut off from the industrial hub in Western Germany, which is much richer in natural resources. As a result, the GDR has to rely on expensive imports for raw materials. A lot of its industrial capacity and manufactured goods have been seized as wartime reparations, and many of the factories that did exist in the region have been dismantled by Allied forces.
Arriving at Tilbury Docks, the cargo ship Hirondelle brings a mixed consignment of materials by way of reparations from Germany.
In these early years after the war, East Germany focuses on establishing its own heavy industry. Until this is taken care of, the production of consumer products doesn't get prioritized. Basic goods like clothes and tools are often in short supply, if they are available at all. Prices can be astronomical. Even food is scarce. Every month, around 30,000 East Germans pack up and head to the west before the border closes in 1952. A heavily secured wall was built in Berlin in 1961. On the other side of the Iron Curtain, West Germany's economy is recovering at a surprising speed. The Wirtschaftswunder, or economic miracle, is elevating Western Germany far sooner than anyone expected. East Germans are well aware their standards of living are lagging far behind their West German neighbors. This will be an ongoing source of tension between the governing party and the workers. People are increasingly fed up. By 1953, workers rebel. What begins as a series of strikes and protests against the meager standards of living spreads into a movement throughout the country. Workers storm town halls and demand free elections and a reunified Germany. The party turns to the Soviet Union for help, and the Soviet tanks roll in to brutally squash the uprising, killing dozens. In an attempt to meet the workers halfway, the party makes considerable efforts to improve access to consumer goods. One major area of focus is in rebuilding the nation's chemical industry, with a campaign operating under the catchy slogan of "Chemistry yields bread, prosperity, and beauty," the nation's chemical production is kicked into high gear. In particular, plastic starts to infiltrate the nation. But it's not just plastic that receives a push in production. By the 1970s, it becomes clear that something must be done about the country's glass shortage. At a festival, someone makes the unthinkable faux pas of serving a high-ranking GDR minister beer in a paper cup. Drinking it from a paper cup is naturally utterly unacceptable. In 1975, GDR officials task a research lab with figuring out how to improve glass. it should be tougher and more resistant to sudden changes in temperature so that glasses don't need to be replaced as often. As a bonus, they also hope to create a successful export product, an innovation that will gain worldwide respect for East Germany. East German products are often ridiculed by West Germans. East German cars, for example, are slow, sputtering and cramped, and GDR citizens would have to wait around 9 years to get one. Their West German neighbors, meanwhile, are zipping along the Autobahn in Volkswagen, BMW, Audi, Porsche or Mercedes models, and they are becoming very rich exporting them. Socialist production needs to gain legitimacy on the world stage. Could unbreakable glass be the big win East Germany needs? The task is classified as a project of particular urgency, and the chemists get to work. Inventing a successful product is not easy, but you may already have the perfect idea. Let's say you're really inspired by the concept of unbreakable glass and want to make your own unique coffee mugs. After a great campaign in which you demonstrate the undeniable superiority of your mugs in public taste tests, which you totally didn't stage, you've got people banging down your door for your products. But damn, you don't even have an online store yet. This is where Shopify comes in. The platform can help you build your online store. Whether you're just getting started or you're already a mug tycoon, Shopify supports you at every step. With just a few clicks, you can create a customized and professional online store without any prior knowledge. The dashboard always gives you an overview of all relevant data. We personally have been using Shopify for over 4 years for our clothing brand Culture Culture. They have been an invaluable partner building that business. You can try Shopify for free. Just visit shopify.com/fern and start your journey. Glass is all around us. So much so that we don't even notice it. Except, of course, when it breaks. Glass has been with us for a very long time. It's found in nature, like the volcanic glass obsidian. But we've been developing it ourselves for around 4,000 years. Glass is made from sand. Sand's primary constituent is silica, which, when melted and cooled rapidly, creates an amorphous solid. This means that its atoms have a disorderly arrangement. Most solids are composed of orderly crystalline structures, but these atoms are all over the place. It's this random, irregular arrangement of atoms that makes glass so breakable. Glass doesn't break because it's, as commonly believed, inherently weak. Glass is actually quite strong. It can sometimes demonstrate strength greater than steel. Glass breaks because of stress. It may be strong, but it's a very brittle material. This means that it can withstand pressure over time, but it breaks easily with stress like a sudden impact or temperature change. When stress is applied to glass, such as bending or striking, the irregular arrangement of its particles doesn't allow it to deform or stretch like a material with a regular crystalline structure would. Instead, the particles are jostled about randomly, which creates space for flaws to develop and propagate. The rapid spread of cracks causes the glass to shatter into sharp fragments. This tendency to shatter is the biggest drawback to glass. Humans have been experimenting with ways to make glass tougher for thousands of years. In the Bronze Age, ancient glassmakers discovered that mixing the ash of desert plants with sand could make glass more stable and workable. We now know this is because of the calcium oxide, also known as lime, found in the desert ash. Lime is also sourced in limestone, which is abundant in many places on Earth, making it a relatively inexpensive additive. As a result, soda lime glass is still the most prevalent glass worldwide. By the 1970s, other methods had been developed to strengthen glass, tempering it with heat or laminating it between sheets of plastic, for example. But these methods are energy intensive or not good at keeping glassware thin and transparent. The East German scientists are looking to produce glass stronger than your standard, still rather breakable soda lime glass, but on the cheap. After a couple years of studying glass, they experiment with ion exchanging, a process that had been discovered in the mid-19th century. Until this point, it was used mostly for military applications. Ion exchange involves heating ordinary glass and bathing it in a potassium nitrate solution, which temporarily melts the outer layer of the glass. This allows larger potassium ions to move into the glass and crowd out the smaller sodium ions. Potassium ions, needing more space, exert pressure on their neighboring atoms. This creates a strong layer of tension that prevents crackage, a first line of defense for stresses that would normally break the glass. With the ions having less space to be jostled about, there's less space for flaws to develop. The ion exchange method works beautifully. The scientists modestly predict this new glassware will be 5 times more durable than ordinary soda-lime glass. In practice, it's up to 15 times less breakable. By the late 70s, the party orders for this new glass to be produced en masse. Restaurants all over East Germany buy up Superfest glasses until nobody needs to buy anymore. They are sorted for years to come because the glasses almost never break. Nowadays, the glasses you find in restaurants and bars worldwide aren't even close to the same quality. Due to breakage, the typical bar replaces anywhere from 50 to 100% of its glassware every single year. Replacing glassware is a significant expense for any gastro business. By the 80s, East Germany is in glass overproduction and there's a surplus of Superfest. The company patents it, hoping to sell it on the European market. The Council of Ministers is counting on Superfest to bring in 3.7 million Deutsche Marks per year. But there's just one problem. They can't find any buyers. They commission West German sales representative Eberhard Pog to spread the gospel of their superior new product. Pog is blown away by Superfest's quality. He's convinced he'll sell Superfest super fast. East Germany arms him with more than a dozen models, from beer to shot glasses, and sends him off to international trade shows. Pog has got connections to the biggest names in glass production, including Coca-Cola. He eagerly demonstrates Superfest's quality with the zeal of a true believer. But nobody cares. He doesn't sell a single cup. As he recalls it, Coca-Cola reps say, "Why should we use glass that won't break? We earn money with our glasses." Other glass dealers tell him, "Why should we saw off the branch we're sitting on?" The problem with Superfest glasses is that they are just too good. The values that guided its production are not the values that guide most manufacturing. They're entering a market where disposability often trumps durability. A profit motive can incentivize businesses to create products with planned obsolescence. Planned obsolescence is the design of products with an intentionally limited shelf life so that consumers will buy the product over and over again. It's a controversial but very effective business practice. For example, light bulbs that never break have existed for more than 100 years. But in the 1920s, a cartel of light bulb producers made sure to never produce anything lasting more than 1,000 hours. Once the Berlin Wall fell and the GDR dissolved, Superfest too ended. In 1991, it shut its factory for good. Collectors still hoard crates of the glasses or sell them on eBay. There are restaurants and bars throughout Eastern Germany that use the same Superfest glasses they bought 40 years ago to this day. Though planned obsolescence is not the whole story for Superfest's disappearance. It was also just ahead of its time. Major US manufacturer Corning Glass experimented with hardening glass with ion exchange in the 60s, independently from what was happening in the GDR a bit later. And when they realized how strong it was, they thought, like the East Germans, that they had hit the jackpot. They pitched their glass to companies that make phone booths, car windshields, and prism windows. At first, there was interest, but sales were slow. Corning was charging a lot for the glass. Most of the potential buyers ultimately went back to using laminated glass as they had been since the 1930s. Corning's upgraded glass just wasn't worth it to them, so the hardened glass got shelved. For decades. That is, until 2007, when Steve Jobs approaches Corning with help in creating the iPhone. He needs a glass that's thin, transparent, and as unlikely to shatter as possible. And that's how chemically hardened glass is most widely used today, in the screens of billions of electronic devices worldwide. They call it Gorilla Glass. The story of Superfest does make you wonder. how many products around us are worse than they have to be.